This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today, the House began debate of the welfare reform bill. One of the proposed provisions would prohibit cash benefits to single mothers under the age of 18 in an attempt to discourage teenage pregnancies. The bill is controversial, but most people seem to agree that poor, single teenage mothers are likely to stay trapped in the cycle of poverty. Why are so many adolescent girls becoming mothers? My guest, Judith Music, offers some answers in her new book, Young, Poor, and Pregnant: The Psychology of Teenage Motherhood. It's based on her observations as the first director and current vice chair of the Ounce of Prevention Fund in Illinois. The fund runs pregnancy prevention programs in communities and in schools, as well as support programs to help teenage mothers. I asked her why she thinks so many teenagers get pregnant.
Very often, people who do large-scale surveys and who don't really know these young women or who work with them say, oh, you know, a large percentage of these are unintended pregnancies. Because these young women, if they don't know you and you ask them, they know it's socially correct. Did you mean to have this baby? Oh, no, it was a total surprise. But, you know, just because something is not deliberately planned doesn't mean it isn't wanted. And over, those who work with young mothers, and obviously I include myself in that, they will tell you in their speaking, in their writing, in groups with each other, that they really do want to have a baby.
Why would they want to become a mother at such a young age?
When you look at what the developmental task of adolescence is, for all of us, no matter where we live, anywhere in the world, the task of being an adolescent is to develop more fully a sense of identity. Who am I? What can I do? Where am I going to go with my future? And if, as is true for poor young women, when you look around, and there are very few models around you in terms of, say, the significant females in your life, your mother and her sisters and your sisters and perhaps your grandmother, who before you have had children as teenagers. And when you go to a school that gives you a very strong message as soon as you enter by how poorly equipped it is, how chaotic it may be, that really, we don't really care about you as a potential learner. All of these things go into the package of your identity. Who am I and what can I do? And if we have to reach out to an identity, here is motherhood. It is a valued and obvious identity. And for many young women, there is nothing else they have.
At your program for pregnant teenagers and teenage mothers, Ounce of Prevention Fund, you've had the girls keep diaries of their thoughts and their experiences. What are some of the things they've confided in their diaries about the reasons why they wanted to become mothers?
Well, a number of things have come out. One of the things that was a thread we didn't expect, Terry, was the role of sexual abuse in their young lives, even before they got to adolescence, in teaching them about sexuality. And very often, as they wrote in their diaries, in their letters, older men within their family, maybe their stepfathers or mother's boyfriends or uncles or whatever, initiated them into their sexuality in their pre-adolescent years, and they didn't know there was really anything the matter with it. And that's a thread that they themselves tie to why they became pregnant. They also very often speak about their own mothers and that they were maybe fighting with their mother, and when they got pregnant, they and their mother reached a rapprochement. So you can see the thread in there of needing to be like your mother. And they speak about that as well a great deal. And they speak repeatedly about the men in their lives, in their diaries.
You know, you'd think that a girl watching her friends handle motherhood might be discouraged from becoming a mother because it's so hard to be very young and to be a mother and to be poor. Yet it doesn't seem to discourage girls.
Well, you know, adolescents don't learn very well vicariously, in a sense. They think, well, because I knew so-and-so who was killed while they were driving in a car fast, or so-and-so took an overdose, it won't happen to me. And that's part of kind of the adolescent mindset. And they don't see that. They think, oh, Patsy's child falls down and makes a big fuss in the mall and embarrasses her. Mine won't. But they haven't had one yet. And they can't project to what that will be like. And so they don't learn from that.
Judith Music is my guest. She's a developmental psychologist and vice chair of the Ounce of Prevention Fund, which runs pregnancy prevention and teenage parent programs in Illinois. She's also the author of the new book, Young, Poor, and Pregnant. I believe that your center actually started out as a center for victims of sexual abuse, and then it developed into a program for teenage mothers. So you must have found some kind of connection between the two.
Well, it's an indirect series of paths. When we did research on the prevalence of sexual abuse, the time it was most likely to happen was in the prepubescent years. So this is when a girl is coming into her femaleness and into her sexuality. And if sexual abuse happens at that time, that sort of teaches her that she doesn't control her own body. And in order to contracept, you have to believe you have a body that belongs to you and that you have control over. And when you control a pre-adolescent girl's body, you do control her mind. And so it affects her ability to contracept. But it also affects something that I don't think many of the people talking about policy, Terry, really understand. It affects the sense that you can have any control over your life in a variety of domains, school or work. It breeds a sense of helplessness. And that sense of helplessness is what leads girls to very often just let pregnancy happen to them, to just let go of school. And it's that sort of thing.
Do you find that girls who are sexually abused at home are more likely to engage in sex with boyfriends at an early age?
They are more likely not only to engage in sex with boyfriends at an early age, but they're more likely to have boyfriends who are not teenagers. I think one of the things that is just beginning to be understood, and we also looked at this 5 or 6 years ago, most of the fathers of teenage mothers' babies are not teenage men. They are adults. 50% and above are adult men. So girls who've been sexually abused seem to find a series of Mr. Wrongs who continue an exploitive relationship with them, and very often then with their own children.
You've spoken to so many girls who have become pregnant. What are some of the reasons they've given you for using or not using birth control?
Well, an especially interesting thing is you may ask a direct question about something like birth control, but what they will answer you may not be that direct, although sometimes they say things like, I was taking the pill, but it was making me sick. So there is some of that. There's a lot of old wives' tales about fear of it. I was afraid I'd get cancer, or it made me sick to my stomach, or my mother told me not to take it. It would ruin my body. But very often they bring up issues of chaos in their life. If you say, what happened? What was going on in your life when you got pregnant with your first child? And were you using contraceptives at that time? They may say, well, my mother had just gotten out of a drug treatment center, and we were moving from place to place, and I left my pills someplace. But what she's really telling you is her life was in chaos, and she wasn't paying attention. Or perhaps she did indirectly want to have a child at that time. So these young women know about contraceptives. They just have a variety of reasons for not using them, including the fact that they say their partners won't use condoms. And again, these young women don't feel empowered enough to make a partner use a condom.
Is it hard to convince girls that they have the power to tell their boyfriend, no matter what age he is, you have to use a condom?
It's one of the most difficult things you can possibly imagine, and you can't do it. You know, whenever I hear about people who are running self-esteem groups, as if you can say to somebody, you know, feel good about yourself. You're a great girl. That's not, you can only feel good if you can do good. And the same thing holds for being able to have the power to tell a partner that they have to use a condom. When young women begin to get their own lives on track, or if they already have them on track, and they feel a sense of direction and purpose about what they want to do with their lives, and they understand that a pregnancy will interfere with that, and they have the skills that ground them in the knowledge that they're going to be able to do what they want to do with their lives, those young women can get people, they can get their partners to use condoms.
Judith Music is my guest, and she's a developmental psychologist. She's vice chair of the Ounce of Prevention Fund, which runs pregnancy prevention and teenage parent programs in Illinois. She's also the author of the new book, Young, Poor, and Pregnant. Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more about teenage pregnancy. This is Fresh Air. Back with Judith Music. She's the author of the new book, Young, Poor, and Pregnant, The Psychology of Teenage Motherhood. You not only work with pregnant girls, you work with teenage mothers. What are some of the surprises you've seen teenagers face after they have the baby, things that they weren't prepared for?
I think they were prepared for very little other than very often, especially a younger teenager, let's say, a 15 or 16-year-old. After the showers are over, the baby showers, and after the baby is a little bit bigger and becomes not just a lap baby anymore, but an assertive toddler who says no and wants it's their own way, they're not prepared for that. And they very often misinterpret it as the child not liking them. This is a time when many girls, if a new skill hasn't changed their mind about what their future is, and if they have a baby who's now a toddler, and they don't have any reason not to have another, and maybe they have a new boyfriend, they become pregnant again.
But to have another compliant infant.
That's right. They have another sweet baby that you can take around, and everybody says how cute that baby is and how cute you've dressed the baby. So they're not prepared for that. They are not prepared to be selfless, which is what is required for the mothering of a helpless young child. They're not prepared for the relentlessness of being on call and not being able to be free in the way that they were before. They're not prepared for being pushed into adulthood.
Do you find that girls, as they turn into women, ever reach a point where they say, maybe I made a mistake about becoming a mother so young?
Yes, quite often they do in young adulthood. And even if, as they begin as those who are going to go far, and some indeed do go far, develop these skills, and then begin to get out into the world of work and see how hampered they are by having one or more children, then they may reflect on it and say that they're sorry they didn't wait, because they can now see they're out in the world, away from perhaps the community they grew up in, and they can see how they have limited their lives.
You know, the public debate about teenage pregnancy usually has to do with single teenage mothers.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that often the teenage mother would prefer to have married the father of the baby?
I think it depends. I know that's a sort of a wishy-washy answer. Many of these young women have all of the old 1950s ideas about what they'd really like, and they'd like a husband and a house with a white picket fence and a nice yard for their children. And yes, they would have liked to marry the father. But if they're, especially if they're younger teenagers, 14, 15, and 16, that young man has moved out of their lives and has been replaced by somebody else who they now perhaps may want to have a child by. So I think that ultimately many of them would like to get married, but who will they marry? Most of the men in their life surrounding them are very marginal in terms of being able to support a family.
Is the outcome for a teenage mother usually much different if she's married than if she remains single?
Yes. If she's married, if she doesn't pay too high a price in the sense of being married to somebody who is abusive to mm-hmm. her, just in order to have the money. But in general, for those young women who are able to find a stable partner and who is a father for their children, yes, they do indeed do better. But they're not all that many of the men around them who are capable of fulfilling those roles. It's a sorry truth, but it's a truth.
You not only run a program for pregnant teenagers and teenage mothers, you've studied other programs and you've tried to reach some conclusions about why some are effective and why others are ineffective. But I think one thing you found that most programs are up against is that a lot of girls have this self-sabotaging instinct. And they make it very hard. I mean, they turn their back on opportunities. Maybe you could give us a couple of examples of that and how hard it is to have an effective intervention.
Yes. In a sense, what many people who run programs or even in schools could tell you is just when a young woman is on the brink of having an opportunity or making a really positive move in her life, many of them, in a sense, shoot themselves in the foot. I can give you an example. A young woman who we worked with got accepted in a nurse's training program, and she had just one child at that time. And she had graduated high school, or rather gotten her GED, and then she went and saw what the nurse's training program would be like and began to voice some fears about it. And the next thing you knew, she was pregnant. In a sense, she was saying, I'm not ready for this. I'm not ready to go into an environment where I'm perhaps going to be the only teenage mother and where I'm the only one who isn't going to be able to study at night. And I'm going to be in among women who are different from the women around me. One of the reasons girls sabotage themselves is think of what it takes to be different than all of the significant women in your lives, in your life. The first in your family to not have baby after baby, the first to graduate high school, to work outside of the community. For many of these girls, psychologically, it's as if they're saying to their own mothers and all the women they depend on, I'm going to be different than you. And you can put in parentheses, I'm going to be better.
Oh, so like it means you weren't good enough.
You weren't good enough for me. And when I do that, say, to my mother, I risk the loss of really the only significant female figures in my life.
I know that there are some school programs that try to show teenagers how really difficult and exhausting and time-consuming it would be to be a teenage mother. And some of these programs have dolls that require a lot of care.
Right.
Or almost like little alarm clocks that go off every few hours just to remind you that there will be a baby interrupting the regular pattern of your life if you mm-hmm. become a mother. Or have you even heard of a program where you have to carry around an egg all
egg.
Day?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So to show that just one wrong move and you could have done something really damaging. Do you think programs like that are effective?
What I think is, let's say a program like that is in a classroom and there are 30 girls.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it'll help one that was on the edge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was kind of ambivalent, and it will, and that's a little more mature and really can, you know, learn something by example. But no, I think they're a gizmo. And this field is full of gimmicks. You know, every week it's another gimmick.
The House is debating the welfare reform bill this
mm-hmm.
week. And I think one of the assumptions of that bill is that if we cut benefits to teenage mothers, it would discourage other teenagers from becoming pregnant. Based on your research, your observations, what do you think?
Again, as in that classroom with 30 girls, let's say there are 30 girls, and let's say those 30 girls have already each had a baby. I think the notion of cutting welfare benefits will deter many of them from perhaps having another one right away. But it will not prevent first pregnancies. I do not believe that, because most girls, when they're drawn to that, are in a sense very young, and they may not just be young in years, but they may be very immature. And that punishment, so to speak, that consequence, it just doesn't ring true for them. And so, no, I don't think it is going to prevent teenagers having babies. I do think it may slow down some who would have baby after baby.
Judith Music, thank you very much for talking with us.
Oh, and thank you, Terry.
Judith Music is the author of Young, Poor, and Pregnant, The Psychology of Teenage Motherhood. She's vice chair of the Ounce of Prevention Fund in Illinois. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.